Thanks for listening. Please tune in next week, same time, for another edition of Hand Me Down Tunes.
And listen to the Mates' new album, Watch the Stairs.
Watch the Stairs and don't go up.
Marshall fell on the stairs today, so better watch them.
I fell on my face walking here, so
I did not even listen to our own album title.
Bye, Grandma.
Nana and Grammy. Thanks for listening. And bye, Mom.
Bye, Mom.
All right, thanks for listening. See you next week.
Bye, guys. See you next week.
that your parents like to meet. I've got a nice car, 9 to 5, and I keep...
All right, I am turning this on now. Cutting into the music, as always. All right, everybody. You're listening to Man v. Mob Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. Got two in-studio guests tonight. Oh, and Ben's mic broke again. You got to figure that out, Ben. Got to stop doing that.
I get mic 3 live.
Yeah, I'll turn mic 3 live. There you go.
Last time Ben was in the studio, broke the microphone, and gets into the studio again. First thing he does, break the microphone.
This has happened twice now. All right, everybody. So this is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio that you're looking to, that you're listening to. So the last show that you heard was very professionally done. I think
yeah, there's some good energy coming from the studio.
Yeah, we need to bring on that female perspective. It's going to degenerate into locker room talk in here, as it always does.
Yeah, I mean, let's just look at this degenerate right here. Look at his outfit.
Yeah, you look like you've done 5 drugs tonight and you're trying to hide it.
Hope you didn't drive here.
I don't know. Like you look like Stevie Wonder over there. Ray Charles.
We need to get you on the camera, man.
Yeah, please show the world, Ben.
I have sensitive sea blue eyes, so.
My in-studio guests tonight are Ryan and Ben. They've both been on a bunch of times. Ryan's been on now 7 times. Ben has been on 2 or 3 times. 3. So, all right, first question is, what do you guys think of Mike Bloomberg?
I did like him prior to his last debate performance.
His only debate performance.
He'll be in the next debate. I think this one tomorrow. But
you might need to move the mic somewhat closer to you, Ben, or move your seat. Hold up. This could be just... There we go.
We did have a good discussion.
Try your mic now. Try sit talking into it.
Yep. Is it working?
I can try not really tell. This. Come on. Talk into the other one.
This one?
Yeah. That worked? They're all on right now. Oh, man.
My goodness.
Is that one connected? Does that have a wire connected to it at all?
All right, I'm going to answer the Mike Bloomberg question.
Yeah, Mike Bloomberg question.
Well, Ben figures out his microphone situation.
Just loud buzzing in the back, too.
So, we had a discussion a couple weeks ago as to whether or not we thought it was right, or I don't want to say fair, but just and appropriate that somebody who's extremely wealthy can essentially buy their way onto the debate stage. Mm-hmm. They've earned their own money, so I can see an argument for why can't they spend it the way they want to spend it. But I can also see the counter argument, which is it's not democratic if you're constantly shoving your message down people's throats by getting on a whole bunch of media platforms because you're paying for it, essentially. You're paying to get in front of people. I just heard on NPR on the way over here, actually, to the studio that Mike Bloomberg has spent $450 million so far, which is an insane amount. All of his own money in his campaign.
I'd spend that amount.
You spend that amount?
Yeah, I would.
And his net worth is at about $60 billion.
Drop in the bucket.
$450 over $60 billion is a...
It's a tax write-off for him, isn't it?
I don't think you can... I don't know actually what the tax repercussions are. I don't think you can deduct anything for donating to a political campaign, even if it's your own.
Do you think he's likable at all?
I do think he's likable. I like him for his business savvy. Me, I don't know. What do you think of him?
I mean...
His business savviness.
No, I think he's a middle ground candidate, and you know, I think it's one of those areas where I know Ryan seemed to have an issue with the NDAs.
Didn't he sign a bunch of NDAs with women?
He goes,
they might not have liked the joke that I told.
Well, hey,
it was the worst response you could have given. Like we're coming out of we're in the middle of a presidency that started with Donald Trump being accused of muzzling women's right to speak out against their alleged accuser, him in this case, because of these NDAs. And so I think the Democrats were like, well, if anything, to not be hypocritical, but two, our values, we want, you know, women to be able to speak out against these types of atrocities and allegations. So the fact that he's like, well, they signed the NDAs and we're going to uphold them, I don't think that was for his first performance, and Elizabeth Warren attacked him for it.
Yeah.
Well, I think they all kind of teamed up on him for it, but...
Yeah, it was take
just
on Bloomberg.
As a candidate, knowing you have those out there and people knowing that you know you have those out there.
You would think he would have had a better canned
been more
response
prepared
for that,
for that question.
Yeah.
Tough start to the night. I actually thought he did better as the night went on, but it was tough to come back from where he started. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much money he can throw at it and how big a difference that makes.
I don't think people are inspired by him at all, to be honest with you. I love that meme that I posted to the group. It was a Simpsons meme where Barney Gumble is sitting next to a Mike Bloomberg character on the school bus. He goes, "Hey, aren't you that guy that nobody likes?" He goes, "My, no, I'm Mike Bloomberg."
He did come. So I guess one of his strategies was to just not compete in the early voting states, like the Iowa and stuff, because I think he just, like, my money's not well spent winning these 30. They count for so little delegates in the primaries that he's just like, I'm going to just ignore these states, which I think that some of the candidates were PO'd by that, coming at it from with that, like, mindset, because it's like, you're kind of saying, I mean, it's very strategic, but there's also
human
beings.
I can afford it, you can't.
Right. There's also human beings. Well, he was kind of, I just think, more like he's, like, low population, low total delegates. It's not really like the best use of his money to be going there.
Yeah, he should be attacking
bigger places, attacking the states for Super Tuesday, which is where like a huge bulk of the delegates are going to get awarded. So,
fair enough. All right. So, have you guys heard about how? By the way, Ben, congratulations on your new residence in Medford.
Yeah,
welcome to the
residence
club.
Of Medford. No longer.
Welcome to the club.
You're officially a bad boy in Medford.
I mean, this is actually unprecedented. We are all
BBOM.
Yeah, we're all in the vicinity of each other now, and this is cool. Once spring hits, it's gonna be good.
We should maybe get tunnels. We should borrow some tunnels between all of our properties.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah,
I mean, we talk about spring weekend at Tufts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we dig it right under the Tufts campus, actually. Tunnel right underneath to BBOM, over to Princeton Street, and then maybe over to Davis, too.
Yes.
Be nice. All right, cool. So, did you hear how there's going to be a couple potential dispensaries in Somerville?
I heard about it through you last week.
Well, this is good. One of them is going to be over in Union Square, potentially. Mm-hmm. One of them is going to be in Davis, and there's going to be a third one sort of somewhere in the middle. Just thinking to myself, that could be interesting. If they can get rid of the TSA vibe from dispensaries. Have either of you ever been to a mass dispensary before?
No. I went to
Brooklyn. Yeah. Okay. What about you, Ben?
I have not, no.
Okay. Yeah, there's very much an airport vibe going on. Mm. And I think if they can work to get over that vibe, make it a little bit more enjoyable to actually be there, then that'd be nice, because right now there's 40 security cameras, there's a line back and forth.
Yeah. It's a mostly cash business, and they're dealing with drugs, so I guess that's just I think the towns that they're the businesses are set up in are really just trying to make sure that there's not serious issues. They don't want to be the one that's going to cause the problem for the whole state and maybe make it harder to relax the marijuana laws in the state moving forward. So I think they're just taking a, let's be really strict and thoughtful about how we execute right now. Mm-hmm. And then once we've proven the concept and the communities are used to it and we can see that there's really no serious negative consequences, unintended or, you know, I guess predicted, then maybe it's time to relax the laws and that TSA vibe will go away.
I actually did see an article, though, speaking of them being mostly cash business only places, that a lot of these marijuana companies are finding it tough to actually find banks to put their money in, because banks are what's that acronym there for when they're backed by
FDIC,
like the FDIC, because that's federal government guarantee. They basically, the banks don't feel comfortable that if something were to happen that the federal government would basically support that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And this is an issue that I've heard politicians, I think Elizabeth Warren has spoken to this. They want to get a law passed that if the Congress is not going to legalize marijuana throughout the country, then at least make it so that banks can legally do business with those institutions so that they don't have to have these Brinks trucks coming to pick up cash and do this kind of weird transfer thing in the background.
Aren't they kind of setting it up to fail early on in some ways? That's what bugs me.
I mean, that's what happens when the states choose to act against what the federal government has kind of spoken out on. Mm. So, I mean, really, it could instantly get shut down if the federal government really wanted to. But I think they're just kind of saying, No.
We'll see. We'll let it ride for now.
And that's Trump, too. I mean, Trump is the tone at the top, really. Mm. So, I mean, he's kind of allowing it to happen.
I mean, I haven't been into one, but why is it so, like, sketchy? Like, why isn't it just a liquor store, basically?
Well, I think because there are some differences. I think that's the ultimate goal, to get it to be like a liquor store. But there are so many untried specific regulations around cannabis that they don't really know how to implement it. And they want to demonstrate that it can, in a sort of trial way, work. Mm. And the weird thing is, by not just kind of fully implementing, you don't really get the full vibe of what it's going to look like.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see, but I'm excited that it's some of that is potentially going to be right in our backyard.
Yeah, I think we're definitely, I'm very proud at times like this to be part of a kind of progressive thinking state,
mm-hmm.
not just the politically wise, but in terms of being able to, they're kind of, Massachusetts is innovative. We're not afraid to try new things. I think we were the first state to legalize gay marriage. That is a political thing, but mm-hmm. it's also just kind of being the first in the nation or one of the first states to try something if we think it could work and I think we can execute on it. Proper preparation.
Yeah, and actually there is sort of a danger to being the first one to do something, because I think that, you're like a pioneer, trailblazer, you're on a new frontier, which is cool, but at the same time, you look at somebody like Colorado, or you look at a state like Colorado that was the first one to legalize or to decriminalize whatever they did,
right.
And everybody floods into that state because they're the only one to do it. And so you're sort of getting a false impression of what it would be like if everybody legalized or decriminalized, right? Because when everybody floods into an area because it's different than all the other areas, that's obviously unique from if everybody had it legal, in which case you wouldn't have people flooding anywhere. Everybody would just kind of disperse.
Hmm.
I don't know. I just see like the infrastructure that's set up in these single places that pioneer something is not prepared for everybody to flood in, and like maybe all of the cannabis tourism that hit Colorado at once.
But I think that was like, it became a whole new tourist like niche in Colorado.
Yeah.
So if anything, it's probably helped the state like positively, I would think. I think they were just kind of like, this could have been Washington State, but mm-hmm. I know there were like problems with people smoking out in public when they originally legalized it. They didn't want people smoking out in public places.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of hard to control, but I don't know. I think the state needs to kind of do what they think society wants. If society is like, you know what, we want relaxed marijuana laws, I think the state should be responsive and respectful of the people's rights.
Do you think that they get a disproportionate amount of burnouts over there that collect, or do you think they just kind of stop in, check out, see what's going on, and then go back?
I don't know. I mean, when I went to Washington State a few years ago, there were people in Seattle smoking, and it didn't seem like there was, I wasn't like going around the corners thinking like there was just a bunch of wash-ups mm-hmm. just there to smoke weed all the time. It seemed like, and Seattle's a very functional city.
Yeah.
Some huge, you know, Amazon's out there, Microsoft's out there. So mm-hmm. It seems to be working though. It seems to be working. And even in this state, you know, if people still have their dealers and they want to get it cheap and or they want to grow it, they're doing it. Or I just like that there are people who maybe wouldn't have been using marijuana, but now maybe they're a little more comfortable trying it just to see if it can benefit them in any way, especially from like a medical perspective. Or,
sure.
I mean, I think even it's opened up like the legalization of marijuana has opened up the whole CBD. It's opened up. And I think even though like there was already, you know, those use cases for it, it's opened up other people's minds. Like I know older people, possibly my parents, who were obviously like typical parents growing up, like never do we, never do this. And now like for old like aches and pains, like they use like the CBD creams, and it's like kind of changed their view on
mm-hmm.
a lot of things. Not like they're, you know, smoking out of a bong or anything right now, but you know, I think it's opened up a lot of people's views.
Sure.
On at least the positive uses for.
Yeah. The federal government, and that's not even just marijuana. Like, I want the federal government to, I want the culture around drugs. You don't have to use them. We're not trying to force people to use them.
The culture?
The culture, yeah. Like the culture and the mindset around drugs to be relaxed a little bit. I think if you want to use drugs, some drugs, you should be allowed to do it. And I want the federal government to allow research of these drugs and their effects to be more easily studied as well.
I do too,
including actually, like psychedelics, because there's definitely
psilocybin. Psilocybin with mushrooms, that's actually one of the drugs that's kind of on the list of, hey, this actually really helps depression, PTSD, stuff like that.
There's been some preliminary research that suggests a lot of these drugs can have some like good results in society. Good, positives, can leave a positive impact and can be used in like ethical ways, so legitimate ways. Other than just
I agree.
Tripping.
There's always going to be positive use cases for these, just like there's positive use cases for opioids, just like there's positive use cases. So I think it's, you got to look at some of the unintended consequences of some of, you know, the horror stories that you hear of people and shrooms and things like that, that you're opening that door back up. Not that it doesn't happen already, but for it to happen more.
And then you have to say, are these horror stories that we've seen because of or despite the current status of those drugs as legal or illegal, you know what I mean? So that should be interesting. But yeah, I'm excited. We live in a very frontier time right now.
For sure.
Okay, so the other day, have you two seen the movie Inception?
No.
I have never seen it, but it's been a while since I've seen the...
I rewatched that the other day. I have to say, I appreciate it a lot more 10 years later, the second time.
Nice.
Highly recommend. I think that we need to watch Shutter Island again, though.
Shutter Island, yep.
Yeah.
I saw Parasite, by the way, last night.
Oh, is that the Korean one?
Yeah.
Okay, so how was that?
That was a great movie.
I'll check it out.
Everything was like very original for me. Like it was a lot of just the flow of the film, the way it was filmed, too. You could tell, like, you could just tell it's not like American filming techniques. It just seemed a little foreign. It did seem foreign in the way that it was filmed.
So, what is it, a thriller?
I don't think thriller on its own is an accurate description, but it's probably like very similar to a thriller.
Okay.
This is like a bit of, it's like suspenseful at times and thrilling and exhilarating at times.
All right, cool. I would definitely be down for that.
Yeah.
By the way, I as always, as you could predict, forgot to give the studio line. So it is 855-915-9636 if you wanted to call in and say something, make a comment, whatever. Once again, 855-915-9636. That's WMFO or the last four digits. And that's the studio name. So another thing that I wanted to ask you two about is, have you heard of John McAfee?
No, he's not the guy that created the McAfee antivirus.
Actually, yes, he is. Yeah.
What'd he do?
Oh, this dude is nuts. I gotta recommend that you see that. There's a documentary called Gringo, and I think it's called The True Story of John McAfee or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he created his antivirus software back in the 80s or 90s, and then he moved out to Colorado, started a yoga retreat, went bankrupt partially because of the housing crash, I think, and then went down to Belize with what remained of his money in Central America. And he was like a rapist. He potentially killed or was involved in the deaths of two people down there. He had this whole operation where he was trying to create drugs and substances out of the jungle plants. So he brought a grad student down there to work in this lab, and then he faked, like, the reporters would come down and be like, hey, what are you doing in your lab? And he would just have her dye different bottles, basically, and say, oh yeah, this is our product. So anyway, this guy eventually had to flee Belize, went on the run to Nicaragua, and then eventually made his way back to the U.S., ran for president on the Libertarian ticket, and came in second to Gary Johnson. And people just kind of, like, completely forget the intervening years of this guy's life.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a good documentary. I'm going to have to check that out. You said it's on Netflix?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Nice, okay.
But, I mean, I definitely need to have an episode of the podcast or the radio program coming up about psychopaths, sociopaths, and narcissists, because...
Should get some psychology students from Tufts on here.
I'd love to do that.
Talk about the differences.
I mean, I was reading about Jeffrey Epstein recently, and that was really fascinating, too. But, like, a lot of these... I mean, it's predominantly men, but a lot of these guys are like super charismatic, and they just pull people into their like magnetic nature and the aura. Yeah. And then they're just insane. And it's kind of interesting because there's a disproportionate amount of psychopathic people in high prestige positions in like CEO roles, things like that.
Maybe
like
you need a little bit crazy. Maybe you need a little of that like disorder.
It's like a lack of empathy. That's kind of what it is. It's like if you can go in and fire an entire company and not feel bad about it, stuff like that.
I mean, I've only seen the Ted Bundy documentary, but seemingly very intelligent.
Yeah.
The crazy gets in the way a little bit, I'm sure. But so, I mean, I would assume that, or not assume, but, you know, it seems like most of these people are fairly, well, you know, intelligent before they, you know, go and do these horrible things. So that, with the lack of empathy, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt. So if you know any, let's see, sociopaths, psychopaths, or narcissist guys, bring them on. Bring
Some
them
people
on.
Might say I'm a sociopath.
Sociopath.
I've been called that once or twice.
I actually don't think you're a sociopath. I know, I don't think and I'm not just it. Saying that because
I love when people are armchair psychologists.
Yeah.
Maybe a narcissist.
Like a psychoanalyst.
Sociopaths are quite different from from what people were probably describing you as.
You're something.
For sure. Well, if you go through the attributes, just like I would say like a few of the attributes in
Well, all of us to some extent have a few attributes off of
any
list.
That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
So people really jump to the list when they really want to psychoanalyze you.
Well, actually, I think there's a lot of there is a lot of BS throughout psychology and psychiatry, and nobody really brings it up. People hold it just in high regard, and they don't talk about it. But there is just a lot of utter crap, and the list that people there's a book that I just read called The Psychopath Test by John Ronson, and he talks about how there's this guy, he was a psychiatrist, he came up with a list of 20 or so characteristics that would define a psychopath, and you observe somebody and you just check it off, and if a person achieves, like, I don't know, 70% of them, then they're a psychopath. And he's saying that the people in charge of these lists are, it's like they went to, it's like what I did the other day with the hemp staff training, where I took like a 4-hour course and got a certificate. I mean, that's what these people did to determine whether somebody was a psychopath or not. They could have been on their phones texting during it, and that's kind of scary.
It is. I think, but I know for a fact there'd be some psychology students that might get a little offended by that.
Oh, no.
We'll have to see what their
perspective
is on. No, I know
there would be, but I mean, there's a lot of BS in their profession.
There might be.
Yeah.
Maybe we need a counter-argument book.
We definitely do. I'd like to bring on a psychologist and an anti-psychologist.
Yes.
But this was another interesting thing, is the Scientologists are super anti-psychiatry, because the creator of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, he created Scientology as like a self-help thing, and he felt that the psychiatrists and the pharmaceutical industry were hurt by the existence of Scientology, because people would no longer need drugs or psychiatrists. That was pretty interesting.
Self-interest. They want their organizations to survive.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so I was curious, jumping into your guys' lives, stories from the workplace that, like, the most ridiculous interactions that you've had with coworkers or people in the workplace. Does anything come to mind?
People in the workplace.
No specifics, but no specific names.
No specific names.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Even people who, I mean, there's always somebody who goes into the break room and microwaves like a
fish,
like a haddock fillet.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been like kind of nonsense stories like that. Like when I worked in audit, we would be in these conference rooms when we're at the companies that we're doing auditing the financial statements for. And I just general rule, like, don't bring smelly foods into work, especially when they get heated up, because they diffuse so easily. And you're in a small space like a conference room. And there was this one girl, like, she was just huge into fish, and she'd bring in like frozen fish, like meals that she'd buy at the grocery store. She'd nuke them in the microwave with the client, and then she'd bring them into the conference room. And I like fish, but I'm just like, you know, it's very, just a strong aroma that you don't necessarily want to, like, especially when you're eating like a, I don't know, like a taco salad. I don't necessarily want like fishy smells coming from across the table. But
do you think anybody told her, or do you think she didn't care?
I just don't know how you don't, like, come across that, like, taboo at some point. Living, I think she's from the United States, so I just don't understand how she didn't know it. Like, I feel like I've heard it like dozens and countless times about the jokes about bringing smelly, fishy foods into the office, and or if you're going to do that, then you should be in like a larger room or eat it outside at the picnic table or something. Not in a small conference room. I mean, it's kind of just be like if you like took your shoes off in a conference room with your coworkers around, like your feet might smell. They've been sweating inside your shoes all day.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
Or people who go to the gym and put their gym bag under their desk afterwards.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Like, let's be mindful. If there's like a anything in there that you're not washing all the time,
mm-hmm.
or if the gym bag itself is just never getting washed and it's always in contact with sweaty clothes, then I'm sure there's some funky smells coming from it. Mm-hmm. But you can't. It's hard to smell your own aromas, so I can imagine how it's difficult to like realize. But that's where I think a little common sense comes in.
Mm. Yeah.
So I guess to follow up on that thought, you know, you've primarily worked in the accounting fields and mm-hmm. in standard office style setups. I've
thought you were about to tell me you often smell all the time. And you don't realize it.
No, but obviously I come from a little bit of a different working experience background. Working in offices, sales offices, working, coaching, you know, doing little side jobs, warehouses, all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
Working with this many people.
At your current job? Not fun?
No.
Too much fun.
You start
opposite
that,
problem.
I have like a working theory where in baseball, when a kid just doesn't get it,
mm-hmm.
just say, hey, game's just a little too fast for that guy.
And you boot him?
So you don't throw a fastball. You throw
That kid doesn't get to play.
You're saying these big organizations get a collection of misfit toys?
No. Well, yes. Some of them, yes. But but when the game's a little too fast for Tommy, you know, Tommy doesn't get to play.
Yeah.
Fortunately, when life's too fast for a lot of people, they still get to play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you go...
You don't create a side job for Tommy? Like, all right, Tommy, you're a grass inspector.
No, you can't. Not in real life, Pat. I know. You can't. Just, you know, I'm telling you, just don't do yourself a favor. Stay out of, like, market baskets and things like that on Sunday afternoons. Because life's a little too fast for some people. Like, some of these people need a different store. Sundays, and you know these people. Because these are the people who walk down an aisle, mm-hmm. stop in the middle of the aisle, look at stuff. You're right behind them, and they don't move.
Some people are just not aware, though.
But that
situational awareness.
How do you teach situational awareness?
That's a
good question. Because
you can't.
Of it, I think, is
working with professionals, working with kids, working with college age kids. I hand to God, you got it or you don't.
Everybody's got to talk with their own family or their own peers or their own group or whatever. And yeah.
But even within families, you'll see differences among siblings. So it almost goes to suggest that maybe part of it's genetics, maybe part of it's the environment you're growing up in, but like it's not crystal clear how you make those people change. Like, how do you make somebody who you don't think thinks enough or questions information that they get enough? Yeah. How do you teach somebody to think, especially an adult who's been alive for 40 or 50 years? Let's say you're like, you are way too easy to believe things, and you don't, you know, get information from various sources. You don't cross check information. You're just kind of ignorant. Like, and how do you kind of tell somebody that? And how do you change the way that they operate?
I don't know if you can.
You got to hold each other accountable.
I really don't know if you can. Like,
you have to have the mini moments of courage. And I don't think a lot of us have
those.
You need to start confronting all those people that do those things and say, hey, I'm not sure if you were aware, but you're blocking the eye right now.
I'm telling you, it's not worth the time.
All right, people, 855-915-9636. This would be the perfect time to jump into this.
Is there anybody out there who life is just a little too fast for? Let me give you the perfect example.
Once again, 855-915-9636. Give your example.
Or drop a comment on Instagram too.
Yeah, that's true.
When I was coaching, after games, you take the whole team out for a team meal.
Mm-hmm.
We go to a Chipotle.
I was gonna guess ground round.
Nope. You gotta be quick. You gotta be in and out.
Anymore.
So we take the whole team to Chipotle. And everyone knows how Chipotle works, right? You get in line, you start by the bowls of the tortillas, and you make your way down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Whole team lines up. We're talking 30 grown men. There's people in front of the team.
Oh, yeah.
Know your order and be efficient about it. Let's go.
This kid's parents coming to the Chipotle go right to the register.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody tell them?
Oh, I think the people at the register did. Mm-hmm. But you walk in and there's a line wrapped around of people who got there, you know, because your kid's on the team, got there before you, and your first move is to walk directly to the register.
Maybe they were going to go to the register and say, hey, I want to pay for the whole team's meals.
I don't think that's what
they were. But then you guys booted them to the back of the line, and you had to pay for your own meals.
Oh, well, the school picked it up.
Okay, I've got one for you. This is where it gets controversial. Okay, so we're going to talk white people, black people, Asian people. All right. White dudes in particular, they like why are they so annoying and frat boyish often? Like they'll get kicked out of some place, for example. Like I've seen this a bunch recently.
Perfect question for Ryan.
At a bar. And instead of being like, no, I'm just gonna like, I was wrong, I'm just gonna go, and then it's just like a very preppy, like, you can't do anything to me, and then you go, well, I'm pretty sure that you're probably just gonna go to jail, or you're gonna, like, the cops are gonna show up or something like that. It's like that instinct to fight.
There is an instinct to fight at times. It's certainly not helpful once you start drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I think people's judgments, I mean, factually, your judgment, your ability to reason is impaired when you start consuming alcohol and mm-hmm. other substances. But I don't know. I've never thought about it on a kind of like by race or by, you know, kind of look how people are going to react.
I was breaking it down because there are three different things that I like, three examples of those different groups that I thought would be relevant to people's lives that I was going to bring up. So the second one is black dudes. Why are they always on the tee listening to music without their headphones in? It's like, put your freaking headphones on, man. Like,
that
I don't understand why.
It's a super annoying thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the tee, so you'll take the tee sometimes. Yeah, when I used to commute into Financial District, there would definitely be people on the tee, the middle of a busy commute, jam-packed. Everybody else has headphones in, and they're listening to music blasting on their phone. And I was so close to buying like a pair, like 100 pairs of like cheap headphones on mm-hmm. Amazon or something, and start like handing them out to people. Oh, here, bro, looks like you need a pair of headphones, type of thing.
Yeah.
Something that's not like super aggressive.
Yeah.
But it kind of is. But then if they got mad, I'd be like, what? I just gave you a gift. You get mad when people give you gifts?
I know. I think it makes sense. Just hand out headphones to people.
It's like my dad's theory on like texting. Like he's like, oh, imagine if texting came out first and then they released the technology to be like, you can actually hear the person speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
it'd be weird.
What? How would that be weird?
Because you're not used to communicating. If you were
it would be viewed as a much cooler technology, I think. Where it's like, oh, we can only see words that we send to each other compared mm-hmm. to, wow, I can actually call Pat and hear Pat speak. Like,
yeah.
I think if that came out after, people would view it as a technological achievement.
Yeah.
Where with headphones, it's like, oh, like, I can just listen to it straight on my phone. Oh,
yeah.
you mean Bose came out with a device where I can plug it into my phone mm-hmm. and hear a better quality sound where it's strictly going directly into my ears?
Yeah.
But now we're going back the other way. It's like wireless headphones. Now mm-hmm. they're making things you can clip on a wireless headphones to keep them attached and wear mm-hmm, them around. Mm-hmm.
Yep, I'm with you, man.
For
I'm
those that you. Want the wire,
everything comes full circle, look. People.
Oh, this one just popped into my head too. Is and this is often white women. So why do they think that they never have to pay for anything? It's like it's a $5 cover. You know what I mean? I'm like, why is that such a big deal? Just pay for it. $5. Just $5.
I think the answer to that is nobody's asking for it if they haven't actually gotten it to work before, which is also my theory
on
some guys that have this
thing.
Absurd,
it's a white person entitlement thing.
I think it's just entitlement if you've ever gotten anything for free or you have it with, you get things for free with somewhat regular occurrence,
mm-hmm.
Based off of your looks. And so, if you can monetize that, or get brought to the front of the line all the time, if you get a little attention, why not ask? I literally almost always ask for discounts. I won't do it at like McDonald's
mm-hmm.
or anything like, and I don't do it when I necessarily go out to eat. But like, whenever I'm trying to buy something online with a retailer or something, I almost always ask for some sort of discount. Or at the store, like mm-hmm. if I'm buying something, I say, oh, do you guys have any coupons back there I can use? And I would say, and I don't want people to think I'm entitled. I want people to think that, hey, this kid thinks he deserves a discount. And
I try not to come off like that. In particular, it's like there's a particular like preppy white boy entitlement thing that you see all the time, particularly at bars when it's like somebody knows they did something wrong, but they feel like they have a cloak of like protection around them. Like they're never going to get hit or something like that. And you're like, dude, you're going to get hit. Okay. And then the third thing was with Asians. Walking on the street or on sidewalks, like I don't know if this is still the same, but particularly at college, it was like four abreast walking in this human phalanx, and I'm like, you gotta like walk two in a row or something like that. I don't really
the whole sidewalk with
Yeah, and also, I don't know if this has happened with you, but frequently, somebody walking in front of you who just turns around on the spot and walks right back into you. So I guess the reason why I'm bringing these things up is because I feel like these are all things people feel uncomfortable, like they notice, but they would feel uncomfortable bringing up because they would be thought of or perceive themselves as being bigoted or prejudiced. But what I'm saying here is everybody hold their own group accountable if you feel that way. Like I will talk with other white dudes and be like, hey man, you're being pretty annoying and entitled. And then black dudes, please talk with other black dudes and say, hey man, why don't you put on some headphones on the tee? And then Asians talk with other Asians and be like, hey, by the way, walk on the sidewalk.
Walk single file, please.
Single file.
None of the side-by-side stuff.
Yeah. No hate. It's just simply noticing things.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way to just combat like life being too fast for people. Everybody take care of their own.
Yeah, I mean,
white
I
girls,
think it
you
would
take care of white girls. Like, you see something, say something.
I would like it theoretically if everybody could feel comfortable talking with anybody about things that were like that would just make society a better place to live. But if they can't do that, then at least, you know, let people know when you see it and when you feel comfortable, be like, all right, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But anyway,
check yourself, man.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself. Is my point. I feel like I was speaking for a lot of people right there, and a lot of people might be cringing right now and saying, oh, did he just go there? But at the same time, I said it. You didn't.
That's right. You only listened to
it. I had the balls.
He had the balls.
Yeah. All right. So the next thing is, I don't think you have any stories from work, but just like family stories in general. any family stories or stories from the city?
Oh, I got
or
a story.
From school.
Okay. So my sister, one of my sisters, she bought her boyfriend a Valentine's Day gift, and she took a photo of the. She was so happy with how she had set it up on the desk for when he came home on the table. So she took a photo of it because of how aesthetic the whole arrangement looked.
Yeah,
but I guess she didn't realize that we could zoom into the photo and kind of like get a better look at each of the items. Mm-hmm. So she sends a picture into the family group. She's like, oh, look what I got for my boyfriend. Doesn't this like look so good? And we're all like, yeah, it does look amazing. And then my other sister zoomed into the photo and saw that one of the items was a box of KY, yours and mine, lubricant for sex. And, you know, I was like, Julie... Oh, I'm using
which
names
sister,
now.
Just to clarify.
I'm just going to use names. Lauren's...
That was a fake name. Fake identities.
Lauren's the one that got it for her boyfriend. Julie's the one that identified it. And then I like immediately hopped on it. And then Lauren tried to back herself out of it. She's like, oh, I got it for his car, like thinking that, isn't that, she's like, isn't that the same lube? But like she
what?
I think she knew, it was like a last ditch effort.
Just wear it.
Last ditch effort. She, like, exactly. I don't know how, I was like, you are not even like dumb enough to possibly believe that. Like there's just no shot that I'm going to buy that you think that you bought
him. Is
that
him. A compliment or not? If somebody says you're not even dumb enough to possibly
believe that. It's saying like you can be dumb sometimes, but not even you are that dumb.
It had
but,
the numbing cream in it too. For the car.
It had like the description of like what it was going to do, like tingling sensation. I'm like, how could you possibly like nobody
tingling sensation of the muffler to
exactly. So she's like and like she could tell she was wicked embarrassed.
Yeah,
and I was real close to screenshotting it, deleting out the names and throwing it onto my Instagram story, but I guess I chose to tell it on the radio instead. So
it's pretty hilarious though.
Yeah, it was.
Oh boy.
And my dad didn't even comment on it. He's in the group, but and he was talking prior to, he commented on the photo. And then once we started talking about the specific items in the gift, he chimed out. He didn't chime in anymore. So,
yeah,
I can understand.
Good on you, Dad.
But I don't mind hopping on my family members for that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Some families, I think, would get uncomfortable. It would be an uncomfortable topic.
Families, you got to call those people
families
out.
Families have to roast each other. That's an
definitely
important
do.
Thing. My sister recently sent me some old photos of when I was like in high school. I think it was mostly high school. She found them in the family album. And they literally look like I'm the school shooter. Like I would look like the exact profile of somebody. You'd be like, that kid should...
Yeah, because Pat had real long hair in high school. I don't know if you remember this.
A lot of people did.
Yeah, but like
wasn't a good look.
He had to have like the what was that the Boston Marathon Bombers name? Yogar Tsarnaev. Is that his name?
I did not look like him.
You had the haircut of him though.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. There's long. You have long hair. Yeah, you did.
Just because I had long hair doesn't mean it looked like that.
It looked a little bit like that.
That was more like Justin.
I could say
Bieber
I looked like
early Bieber.
Early Bieber.
Early Bieber.
Teenage Bieber.
Yeah. Teenage. Yeah. Maybe it was. Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of like that. That's true.
Which I think is kind of like Yo Garcinaev, but
he had like curly hair. I think. I don't know.
Wasn't. No.
Yes. I stand by it.
He had like curly hair.
I stand by it. I'll go do the research and confirm.
I'm saying I look like a generic terrorist, not a specific one.
Like a white nationalist terrorist?
No, no. Like I said before, like one of the profiles that you see on like the news of somebody, like a shooter or something like that. It just looked like creepy photos.
Maybe I need to go to your Facebook and do some investigating.
Well, I'll show you the photos later. It's
We can do it now.
It's not a proud history.
Not a proud history.
Yeah. Tori showed those to me, and I said, Tori, you need to gather up all those albums, throw them into the nearest dumpster, and light that dumpster on fire. Don't let the world find those. No, I'll show you later. But what about when you see old photos of yourself or old things that you've written? Like, have you reread things in the yearbook?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or, ugh. Wrote last week,
that's what
I roll my cringy eyes at. Like, oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or a couple of years ago, or you come across like an email that you sent to somebody at one time, or like a message you sent to a girl that you liked on Facebook in like high school or middle school, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I ever said that.
Collect them though. Keep them in a box.
Well, they're there. I'm not deleting them. They're there.
Time
it doesn't matter. I mean, I don't really care at this point. I would care more so if I was like maybe 35 and looking back at something I said I was 25, because I feel like you need to be held. There's a sense that you're going to be held accountable for things that you did when you were 25, but you're not really held accountable for things that you did.
I don't know. I think we should get over this permanent record concept that we have, where people are going to be held accountable for everything that they've ever done.
What's the limit? Like, what's the limit?
There's something really egregious that if you've done, you can say, all right, well, can't really get over that.
No excuse for that, yeah. But like, what if somebody has a record of making like really sexist, inappropriate comments?
Are you talking about Mike Bloomberg?
Yes, actually.
Wrapping back around?
Yeah. So let's say you were in your 40s or 50s, okay, and you said some things, and then 10 years go by, 15 years go by, you decide to run for office.
Yeah.
And they come out, they surface. So it's obviously possible that you were just joking when you said those things. If there's a clear record of you saying those things multiple times, then maybe it's not, maybe you weren't joking probably, but you could have changed also in the last 10 or 15 years, which is fair.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're saying things when you're 50, I don't necessarily think that, you know, 10 and 20 years is going to change the way you've.
Yeah. Probably once your brain solidifies into your personality after you're like, I don't know, 26 or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you're going to just mostly be that way for whatever you are like for the rest of your life.
Right.
Unless you get strong pushback from people to just hide what you are, who you are.
Do you think when we're old, we're going to be stubborn toward younger generations about like their views and the things that they're...
I already am.
I don't know. Right. I mean, things
already, are... I already like hate high school kids.
Like what? Is there anything specifically?
They...
About them?
Strong. Yeah.
That was a strong opinion.
No, all right.
3 years
all
ago,
right,
you
brought
right.
this
love.
Up at the beginning.
All really right, this is like, people are like, oh, how are high school kids stressed out? When we were in high school, like, we had Facebook, that was pretty much it. Like, we had Facebook, Twitter came around, like, at the tail end of high school. But, like, if me and Pat weren't friends, but Pat friended me on Facebook, like, I was probably going to accept that friend request. Maybe that was just me, I don't know. But, or, like, if you friend requested a girl you liked who was, like, way out of your league or something, like, they probably just accepted it and was just like, whatever, like, it's a friend, like, I go to high school with a kid. These kids today will literally pay cool kids to like the cool kids to take pictures with them, and so they can post them on Instagram. I'm telling you, and they'll pay them to take pictures so they can post them. But
at their own high school,
they'll
go to the cool kids.
I'm
and say,
telling
hey,
you,
I'll
there will
you
be kids.
Bucks
there will
photo.
Be kids on the same sports teams.
Mike Bloomberg does that, you know.
There will be kids on the same sports teams who are like your friends, like you're on the same team. Like if they friend you on Instagram or Facebook, whatever, like you accept that.
Yeah.
These kids won't. They won't do it because they don't even want to be associated with them.
That is strange, but don't you think that's partly because they were just born in the fully post-internet era? Where it's like we were born with 10 we were born with I don't know 10 years of our life before the internet existed or something like that, right? And so like a bunch of our personality or our comfortability with other people started to crystallize by that point, whereas people who have no association with that, that could be why they are just in general more anxious.
Yeah, and I don't want to be like the tangent guy here who goes off on this for the 100th time, but it's like, you know, it's like a lot of these kids have these issues because their parents raised them a certain way.
And I look at this,
or didn't raise them a certain way.
But I look at some of these parents, I go, you were raised when I was raised.
Yeah.
What happened? Like, I know your parents weren't like that. Like, I knew your parents.
Mm-hmm.
What happened? Because that's not how you were raised. Why would you raise your kid like that?
Yeah, well, then it gets into the accountability of, like, if we're all just, like, baked in with a mix of our genetics and the way that we were raised, then how do you hold anybody accountable for anything?
I have a different perspective. Mm-hmm. I know we're running up on the end of the hour, but I love the younger generations, and I think that they find really creative ways to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand why it's a nuisance for some people. But, for example, I was told by a teacher, a middle school teacher, she said that her students, she teaches sixth grade, when she assigns them essays, instead of going home to their computer, going to the computer lab to start, you know, working on it in school, they literally they type things on their phone because they're better at typing on their phones with their thumbs than they are using a keyboard because they literally grew up with tablets and smartphones.
Yep.
And they're just super efficient at typing that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's cool that, like, they're on their phones, they're starting their homework assignments in school, and then they just throw everything into a Word document and format it the way it needs to be formatted to actually submit the paper.
Do you think that we're all a little jelly of them?
No, that's fine. Like, I don't have a problem with that. That's efficiency. That's working smarter, not harder. That's taking advantage.
But that's the same thing with the friends thing, though.
But that's not why I hate them.
The same thing with the friends things, though.
You don't hate them,
I hate them for social reasons.
For social reasons.
But the way that they socialize is kind of just a byproduct of how they use technology. And
I do think it's going to be increasingly difficult to communicate with the younger generation because more and more it's like people communicate in a Family Guy style of reference after reference after reference after reference. And
you're the reference king.
but a lot of it is right now very just rapid fire when it comes to the way that people talk. And particularly it's not even like shared references anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody would understand, oh, it's from this show. It's like some YouTube video that they and their friend watch, right, or some influencer or some meme or something like that. So you have like a very strange way of communicating now where particularly people who are several generations removed, like a boomer talking to a Gen Z would be probably actually different languages.
It's possible. Yet they do communicate. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you see, I don't know if you use TikTok, but when you see like grandparents getting in on the TikTok videos and whatever,
outside of family connections. I get.
But even so, I would say like if you go to a nursing home, I bet you'd see the elderly people there talking to people that they don't know, like grandkids are coming to visit their grandparents or something.
Mm-hmm.
But like random elderly people talking with those kids and like learning stuff and interacting.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's it's tough to communicate, I guess, but I don't think it's any different than it was like, you know, 50 years ago. I think if you looked at the differences in generations between the elderly and young people, I'm sure it's probably heightened or maybe greater now just because it's compounded with technology.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's just a way of life.
I mean, maybe something to continue on next time, but dating. Like, what's going to happen to, like asking a girl out, going out to, like, dinner and holding, like, an hour and a half, 2 hour if you get drinks after a long conversation? Like, are they going to be able to do that?
By the way, my dad has recently said that he said that anybody who gets a date off of an app or a website doesn't deserve a date to begin with.
That's garbage.
So it's funny, see, you disagree with it, but he comes from a different generation and does not appreciate this generation's way of finding a suitor. But
he says if you can't ask for it, then you don't deserve it, basically.
You're asking for it. You just ask for it over the app.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not face-to-face.
It makes it so much more efficient, though, in a way, because it's like the ultimate goal.
That's my argument, too, but it's a complete disconnect.
Yeah. I mean, it's all like economics, essentially. There's like a market for it, and some people are just kind of looking to vibe with somebody and hook up with them. And, you know, Tinder can provide a means to do that efficiently.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know. I don't know, if anything, I think it like opens the book to find someone you're more compatible with than you basically had to live near them like before, unless you like strangely just met out of nowhere for whatever reason. I mean, there's...
Oh, it does, but just communicating that across generational lines is difficult. Nobody's really... Everybody's going to judge reality by the basis of how they grew up. So, all right, I just want to say before you read the PSA at the end that... For those of you who were listening tonight, thank you. You were listening to Man V Mob Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin, and you're going to be able to find Man V Mob Podcast on Spotify, on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts. And thank you to my in-studio guests, Ben and Ryan. And Ryan, what PSA do you got?
It's a simple one. It's about texting and driving and using your phone. And it's actually quite relevant because there's a new law in Massachusetts that's gone into effect. You're not supposed to be using your phones while driving anymore. Except to, I think you can use the button once or you can initiate like a navigational system. Mm-hmm. But you're supposed to be completely hands-free. So keep your eyes on the road, hands off your phone, and use Bluetooth and
get the little phone holder.
Stuff. Yeah. Right on. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep.